Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-1304, United States Department of the Navy, Naval Undersea Warfare Center Division, Newport, Rhode Island, Petitioner versus Federal Labor Relations Authority. Mr. Pinnock for the petitioner, Ms. Coppell for respondent.
May it please the court, Mark Pennick, the U.S. Department of Justice. I represent the Navy in this case. The authority in this case has compelled the Navy to violate the Appropriations Clause. It has affirmed an order of the arbitrator compelling the Navy to provide bottled water in a manner that is directly contrary to the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act, and thus, by extension, the Appropriations Clause. The authority has no jurisdiction to do this. This is beyond the scope of the authority's authority under the statute, and indeed, the jurisdictional bar that otherwise would apply to these cases of this type simply does not apply to where the authority is construing the Anti-Deficiency Act, the Purpose Act, or by extension, the Appropriations Clause. The key case that I want to focus on is this court's 1994 decision in Department of Treasury and Customs Service, 43 F. 2nd, 682, where this court held that the authority, that bar, that jurisdictional bar, cannot be extended to accord the authority, final decision-making authority, over statutes that didn't have any direct relations to conditions of employment. In that very discussion, at page 688 and 689, the court said that applies a fortiori to constitutional questions, which is, of course, what this case presents. The authority simply doesn't have the final word as to what the Appropriations Clause means. Otherwise, the authority would be in the position of ordering the, as it did in this very case, of ordering agencies, federal agencies, to make appropriations that, in our view, are contrary to the Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act. That the authority may not do.
Which, unlike the Air Force case we had recently, the statute here doesn't specifically speak to bottled water.
It doesn't, because no one's asserting that there is a statute here that even could be construed, unlike the Air Force case.
You were just saying, I think, that there was a statute that barred what was going on here, and therefore, by extension, the Appropriations Clause?
Well, the statute is, the two statutes are, the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act, broadly bar expenditures by agencies that are contrary to the Appropriations Clause. And the consistent interpretation of those statutory schemes and the Appropriation Clause by the Comptroller General since 1923, we have 88 years of consistent interpretations, says,
point, it's not in the statute. I understand the Comptroller General opinions.
It's not in the statute because we really don't even have the situation. Our case is even more extreme in terms of the authority's authority than here. At least in that case, there was some colorable argument that the Uniform Acts and statutory provision providing for uniform services and cleaning services might be construed to authorize this.
I think no agencies provide bottled water.
Agencies are not supposed to provide water except but where it's necessary to do so because there is no potable water otherwise available. And that's the line that the Comptroller General has drawn consistently since 1923. Indeed, it's the very line that's expressly set forth in the decision that the authority cites, the 2008 Corps of Engineers decision that the authority cites in its decision in this very case. I don't understand how the authority misses this. It seems to think that the agency has some sort of discretion over whether or not it can provide bottled water and therefore must negotiate to the extent that it has such discretion. But the rule that it cites, the necessary expense rule that's in the Red Book, the GAO Red Book, simply ignores the rest of the Red Book. If you look at Chapter 4, page 198, for example, of that Red Book, the GAO says, by the way, you don't have any discretion to provide expenditures for personal expenses of employees. It's right there in the Red Book. By the way, you don't have authority to provide appropriations for the payment of employees' food. That's page 86.
How come agencies can provide water fountains then?
The general, as the Comptroller General has said, agencies are obligated to provide potable water to its employees, along with clean air, restrooms, decent, safe working environment. I mean, if the agency has otherwise provided for potable water, in this case, it's literally undisputed because of the Kane decisions that there is potable water at these Navy facilities in Newport, then the agency has no discretion whatsoever to go off and pay for bottled water. Where there is no potable water, and that was the case in that Corps of Engineers decision I just referred to, then the agency has discretion as to how to provide water. But that is on the condition preceding that there is no otherwise potable water being provided. On the merits, it's the authority's decision is inexplicable. You can't simply ignore, as the authority does, 88 years of Comptroller General decisions. Now, I understand that's not binding, but they are certainly persuasive and has certainly been the consistent rule that agencies have for 88 years followed. I mean, the decisions are literally legion. Now, the authority doesn't even take the attempt to dispute those decisions, doesn't mention them, other than to misconstrue the latest one, the 2008 Comptroller General's decision. But the point that we're making here is that if you follow the Comptroller General's decisions, then literally this case is open and shut, because there is no discretion, because we have provided potable water to all those buildings, all 45, at Newport and Rhode Island. That, the Navy has bent over backwards at no small expense to replace all the drinking fountains that were possibly contaminated with lead because of the manufacture of the drinking fountains, were apparently were then with the lead solder. So replaced them all and tested it with the municipal water supply provided by the Newport City, and indeed have tested the water since that time to ensure. At that point, where is there literally no dispute here that that water is potable, the Navy had no choice. It could not continue to provide with bottled water without coming directly in conflict with the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act, criminal statutes. You cannot expect the executive agencies to risk themselves by continuing to provide bottled water. We're doing so would be directly contrary to this line of the Comptroller General decisions. It's simply inexplicable to me that the authority would purport to require that. And that is our basic point on the merits, and I don't think that nothing in the brief that the authority has filed here purports to dispute any of that, which is odd as well. I mean, this whole problem traces back to the 1990 decision of the Department of Labor, September 1990, that the authority cites in this opinion, where they talk about that necessary expense means that the agency can have some sort of discretion over what's a necessary expense to carry out an appropriation. But that decision itself ignores the underlying principle, again, that the authority was well aware of, that there is no discretion when it comes to the provision of appropriated funds for personal expenses of employees, expressly extending to bottled water. If that is the law, then the case is open and shut. On the jurisdictional issue, it's open and shut. Simply, this court cannot accord or cannot construe 7123 to accord the agency, the authority in this case, final word on a constitutional question, just as it couldn't accord the agency final word on the trade statute involved in the Department of Treasury Customs Service. A fortiori, you can't let the authority have the final word. As this court said in that 1994 decision, Department of Treasury, the authority is a minor three-member commission, and it is utterly inconceivable, this is at page 8690, that Congress could have intended the authority to have the final word as to the meaning of the appropriations clause, which is, of course, Congress's.
Since you've said it twice, it's not really about the appropriations clause, it's about the statute.
I think it is about the appropriations clause.
The appropriations clause just means you can't spend money that's not authorized by statute. But the question here then is, what does the statute mean? So I'm not sure.
No one has suggested in this case, Your Honor, that there is any underlying appropriations that purports to authorize bottled water. None. This is not like the Air Force in that respect, because at least there was an argument, and it's not like the ACT cases where there was at least an argument that there was some statutory authorization. There is none here. There's not even an arguable one. No one's identified it, and the authority doesn't assert one. Not even the unions asserted it. Now, the remaining question, of course, is whether the court should take a judicial notice of the arbitrator King decisions. And we ask the court to do so because they're not disputed. They're final and binding decisions between the very parties involved here.
Did you ask the FLRA to...
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I think...
The case might have been terminated a lot earlier.
Well, probably not, because with the authority's view of the Appropriations Clause and the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act is that the agency has discretion under the necessary expense rule. So it probably wouldn't have made a difference at all. But for them to ask for a remand now on something that is this clear and which is final and binding as a matter of law under Section 7122B, there's really no point to that. So what we have here is a final binding determination that the water is in fact potable. That's enough to remove any doubt.
Not in the record, though.
It is something the court may take judicial notice of, and we ask the court to do so. There's really no point to remanding, because if the authority is wrong on its construction of the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act, then the authority likewise has to affirm for the Navy in this case because of the Kane decision, because the authority has no discretion to second-guess the Kane arbitrator decisions either. I mean, those are final and binding on the authority as well. We have potable water. Our rule, by the way, is the rule articulated by the Comptroller General is that for the Navy to have any discretion at all on question, there has to be a finding, public health service or a test that shows that the water was not potable. And that's never been the case in this case. What we had was an EPA finding that certain water fountains were contaminated or could be contaminated with lead, and the Navy, in abundance of caution, simply provided bottled water to all those buildings. And then tested it after they replaced those fountains with new facilities. So we don't have the underlying finding here, and this is confirmed by, of course, by the Kane arbitrator decisions, that the water is anything other than perfectly safe. And so the Navy's point all along has been that in the absence of a finding that the water is unsafe, we have no discretion here. And that's correct. And the authority erred in failing to so find. I see I'm into my reply time.
Correct. Say that again. What is correct?
The authority was incorrect in saying that the agency had discretion over here. It was incorrect in saying that enforcing a rule that or finding or award that required the agency to continue to provide bottled water in the absence of some finding that this water is less than potable. We have now a finding as a matter of fact, as binding and final, that the water is potable. There's nothing left for the authority to do under our construction of the Anti-Deficiency Act and the Purpose Act.
So if there were no Kane arbitral award,
We would still prevail here, because there has never been a finding, especially after presented to this arbitrator, that the water, and in fact the authority says so in its opinion in this case, that the water tested is safe. That's at page 132 of the appendix. So the authority acknowledged in this opinion here that the water had been tested as safe. I mean, if you acknowledge that the water has tested as safe, you cannot compel the agency to continue to provide bottled water as a matter of law, because there has been no finding required by the Comptroller General that, in fact...
It says the agency tested fountains for lead and determined the water from the fountains was safe for drinking.
That's correct.
It doesn't say it's safe for drinking. It said that was the agency's, the Navy's decision or view.
That's right, but the authority doesn't cite anything that says that the water was tested anything other than safe. And on the Comptroller General's decision, such a test is necessary for the Navy to even have the discretion to provide bottled water. And there's never been that finding here. And now we have a finding in the Kane decisions which say that, in fact, the water is safe. So, and that's final and binding. That's the end of the story.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court,
The court should not be considering anything that my opposing counsel has just said until it determines that it has jurisdiction over this dispute. And there are two reasons why this court does not have jurisdiction over this dispute. First, review is barred under the statute under 7123A. The authority's decision reviewed an arbitrator's award that did not involve an unfair labor practice under the statute, and therefore the authority's decision itself could not have involved an unfair labor practice.
Refusal to bargain
can be based under the statute or under the contract. And the arbitrator's award said nothing about an unfair labor practice or about our statute. In fact,
and what does the contract say about an obligation to bargain?
The arbitrator did not specifically address where that was in the contract, but the arbitrator clearly was.
And he didn't mention the statute. He just went ahead and resolved this grievance.
He resolved it based on the contract on Article 25, Section 6, under which the agency has an obligation to provide high-quality water. And it was clear throughout his decision that, and he said in his decision.
That's different than the obligation to bargain.
The obligation to. Yes, it is, but it is clear from his decision that he was referring only to the agreement. He made it clear that his only role was to interpret the contract, which is why he did not address the fiscal law issue, which is why he did not order the parties to bargain.
The authority, though, relied on some of its prior cases that were clearly statutory unfair labor practice cases.
That's true. It did cite two of its decisions that happened to be unfair labor practice cases, but not for the proposition that there was or was not an unfair labor practice involved here. It was for other reasons.
We'll pick up on Judge Ginsburg's point. What provision of the contract is relevant here?
The only one that was cited by the arbitrator was Article 25, Section 6, but he made references throughout his decision to the collective bargaining agreement. And that was his only basis for his decision. In fact, even the agency in its exceptions acknowledges, and this is on page 9 of the joint appendix, that the arbitrator's decision relies exclusively on the collective bargaining agreement language and on the evolution of a past practice not inconsistent with verbiage as is contained in Article 25, Section 6 of the collective bargaining agreement. And because the arbitrator's role, he found, was limited to interpreting a contract, the authority's decision had to have been limited to that as well, because the authority's only role under 7122A is to review the arbitrator's award before it and the exceptions. There were no references to unfair labor practices in the arbitrator's award, in the grievances, or even in the agency's.
That makes it a criminal offense for the Navy or any naval officer to provide bottled water. Is everyone supposed to ignore that, the arbitrator and the authority?
Well, here, if there was such a law, the agency ignored it for many years by providing bottled water in the mid-1990s and until 2006.
So it's a law that makes it a crime to provide bottled water when not essential. They determined it was essential for a while, and then it seemed not to be essential.
The statutes involved here, the federal fiscal laws and the Comptroller General decisions do not allow or require the Navy to do what it did here, which was to unilaterally end a past practice.
That's not my question. The question is, even if the arbitrator is not authorized to consider statutory limitations mm-hmm. on the award, how can the authority not do so?
What the authority did here is determine whether the arbitrator's award was contrary to law. And this is a de novo review, so it doesn't really matter here that the arbitrator did not do the legal analysis. And the authority, citing to the two decisions that you mentioned and reviewing the Comptroller General decisions that the Navy cited, found that the arbitrator's award was not contrary to law because nothing in the Comptroller General's decisions or in federal fiscal law prohibits bargaining before a past practice ends.
Do you think it's legal for an agency to provide bottled water when there is safe tap water or fountains available?
Well, whether the water is safe is a matter that can be negotiated between the parties.
If it is safe, is it legal to provide bottled water?
Well, there's language in the Comptroller General decisions that where the water is unsafe, which it was at one point when the fountains had to be replaced, right, if it then becomes safe.
Is it legal?
If the water is determined to be safe?
Yes.
Is it legal? It can be. If it's the best way to provide high-quality water, and the Comptroller General decisions say that the agencies have discretion to determine the best way to provide the potable water, whether that's through new fountains or through bottled water.
But if there are fountains, and if the fountains have safe water, is it legal for an agency to provide bottled water?
If it's a past practice, and that's something, and whether or not, and that would depend on whether there continues to be a necessity.
You think the appropriations laws allow an agency to provide both safe fountain water and to pay for bottled water?
Well, the laws do not allow. What's distinguishable here from what was in the other Comptroller General decisions is that this was an existing practice, and there's nothing in those laws that requires or allows an agency to abruptly end an existing practice without
bargaining. There's a problem with a fountain for, say, a year, but then it's fixed. Then for all time, the agency can spend money on both the fountain and the bottled water?
That, as the arbitrator's decision found, that can be a subject of bargaining. There could be other.
Well, you're not answering that question. It can be a subject of bargaining, is what you've said.
Right.
But does that mean that, therefore, the agency can lawfully do it?
If the agency makes a determination that this continues to be a necessity, and if there's evidence that the water is safe and that it's free of not only lead contaminants but all others, then it could be said that the agency would not have sufficient evidence that this was a necessary expense.
Are you aware of any agencies that provide both safe fountain water and bottled water in the entire structure of the federal government?
I don't know personally, but that's certainly possible.
I agree with
but
that.
Yeah, but the point is, the court should not be getting to these issues until the agency can overcome jurisdictional bars. There's no jurisdiction here because there was no unfair labor practice claim involved. And here, if the agency thought that the arbitrator should have addressed an unfair labor practice claim, that could have been a subject of exceptions. The agency could have argued, well, there's an unfair labor practice claim that you've ignored and you should address it, and that wasn't done. And so it is not the job of this court to recharacterize the grievances that were before the arbitrator. Review is also barred under 7123C of the statute. And under 7123C, if an objection has not been raised before the authority, it cannot be raised for the first time before this court. And what the agency seeks to raise for the first time before this court is a fact-finding by an arbitrator different from the arbitrator whose award is involved in this case, who was dealing with a different record and dealing with different issues, and made a determination that the water was potable. The agency had several opportunities to bring that to the authority's attention if they thought it was so critical to its determination on whether Judge Wolfson's award should be upheld. They could have done it as soon as Arbitrator Kane issued her awards. They could have brought this to the authority's attention, said this is something relevant that you should consider, or after the authority issued its decision, the Navy had 10 days to seek reconsideration.
If we agreed with you on this precise point, that would only justify a remand, right?
Well, that would mean that the agency could not rely upon Arbitrator Kane's finding to argue that the water is potable, and that seems to be the linchpin of their argument that the water is potable, so that would go away. So that fact would no longer be there. And as for a remand, I'm not sure what the basis for a remand would be. Here the arbitrator considered all the facts that were before him. The parties opted, instead of having a live hearing, to base it on stipulations of fact.
The remand would be that the authority is wrong on the law if there is safe fountain.
In other words, that the authority should consider this additional information.
Correct.
although we would be concerned about such a finding because it would this would encourage agencies to ignore 7123C and not raise issues that they should have raised before the authority and then wait to do it before the court. Here, it seems that they're asking the court to do their work for them. Asking them to do what they failed to do. The Navy, in effect, would like to take Arbitrator Wolfson's award, delete his determination not to decide whether the water was potable, take a different award, take that factual finding, which, by the way, may be binding on the parties, but it's not binding on the authority or this court, and then cut and paste and create a new award, and based on that new award, have this court find that that was contrary to law. The agency should not be permitted to circumvent 7123C in this way and ask the court to, in effect, serve as the arbitrator and the authority in this regard.
The Navy has objected to the authority's reading of the statutes, the Purpose Act and
the
Anti-Deficiency Act. The authority discusses them in its opinion. The Navy objects on appeal to your reasoning. And I don't see that you ever answered that in your brief.
Well, it is clearly addressed in the authority's decision.
Yeah, I understand
and,
that.
Right.
And where is the argument on appeal? Have you responded to their argument on appeal? Or did you decide not?
We responded by going back to the authority's decision and the authority's reasoning and finding that the federal fiscal laws do not allow the agency to do what it did here, to unilaterally end a past practice, that they point to nothing in those laws that allow this.
Actually, the only thing I can find is a sentence, but you may be right, mm-hmm. I just don't see it, a sentence that says,
right.
The authority considered but rejected the Navy's argument that because of its pronouncement that its water supply was potable, mm-hmm. bargaining over the discontinuation of its past practice was precluded by the Anti-Deficiency Act, the Purpose Statute, and Controller General decisions.
All right.
Is that it? You're just recounting what you said in the opinion below?
What it does is basically agree with what the authority found in its decision upholding that analysis.
It's not a very your decision in the authority's decision, which mm-hmm. may be correct insofar as it goes, doesn't really anticipate or doesn't really address, I should say, all of the points, does it, that are raised in the blue brief?
I believe it does. Are there any specific points that you would like me to address here?
The agency's decision discusses a few the DOL 1 and 2 Controller
right.
General rulings.
And those are the only rulings of which we are aware that involved an agency providing bottled water and then ending.
Well, they raise a bunch of other decisions in here, but you don't ever tell us why we should think they're off. They're irrelevant.
Are you referring to authority decisions or court decisions?
No, Controller General rulings and other cases.
But I think the main thing to remember here is they don't point to anything in those Controller General decisions that allow them to do what they did.
Well, you're telling us that, but
right.
I don't find it in the brief.
Right.
I find only incorporation by reference of what was in
mm-hmm.
the opinion.
That will be all that's there.
So I'm first reading this as a complete waiver of that point on your part, but that or forfeiture, I should say. But
oh, no, that was not the intent, Your Honor.
That's not what you're...
No,
what you're
no.
Do you dispute any of the Comptroller General opinions? I realize you...
Right, we're not disagreeing with them.
We have an argument about whether they apply here, but do you dispute...
Right.
the correctness of any of the Comptroller General opinions?
No, I mean, there may be a difference of opinion as to how those are interpreted. And although the authority doesn't get deference on those, if the authority's interpretation makes sense, and I think based on the record that was before the arbitrator, the authority's interpretation does make sense, that there was no finding of potability, and that there's nothing in those laws that allows an agency to waive the collective bargaining requirement, and no, we don't disagree with them. We're not bound by them. This court regards them as expert opinion.
Right, but that's really irrelevant because you're saying there's no dispute here that they're correct. There's a dispute just how.
Right, the authority is not questioning the correctness.
Ms. Koppel, suppose the court determines that it has jurisdiction, that the arbitral award is lawfully based on the contract, that the Kane Award is not before us,
mm-hmm.
and deny the petition for review. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that what then happens if the Navy refuses to bargain? I guess it's already taken an unfair labor practice charge, correct?
Right, it has filed an unfair, that's right.
Or refusing to bargain.
For not continuing the practice of providing the water, because the arbitrator did not order bargaining. All the arbitrator required was that the practice continue.
And it hasn't instituted the practice, is that correct?
Apparently, and this is not in the record, typically an agency would file an unfair labor practice complaint if the agency has told them that they're not going to comply.
What is the source of the now pending unfair labor practice charge? Is it refusal to bargain, or is it the change?
The only possible source could be failure to continue to provide the water, because the arbitrator's only remedy was to continue providing the water. The arbitrator did not order bargaining. It said that the parties should could bargain.
They may not have ordered bargaining, but someone can file an unfair labor practice saying they had an obligation to bargain. But is that what happened? I'm trying to get a grasp of what is the parallel proceeding that's now pending.
My understanding is that it's because the agency refused to provide the water.
How can that be an unfair labor practice?
It's an unfair labor practice because it's failure to comply with an authority's decision.
Ah, okay.
That's it.
For the unfair labor practice.
Right.
And does that mean that it's precluded from defending against the unfair labor practice charge on the ground of the fiscal statutes? That the fiscal statutes don't
that it would
forbid
be
it to comply? Right.
That's right. It would be, the only issue would be whether or not they have refused to comply with the authority's decision.
And they say, well, yes, we've refused to comply, but because we're obliged under the fiscal statutes to do so. Is that a cognizable argument, or is that precluded?
Since they would be arguing legality, that's the sort of argument that could always be raised.
Okay.
If there are no further questions.
How much time did Mr. Coughlin have? Okay, I'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
To answer Judge Ginsburg's question at the start, the unfair labor practice, and it's attached to our reply, is for failure to comply with the authority's order to provide, which enforces the arbitrator's ruling to provide the water. And under this court's decision in Department of Treasury Customs Service, we can't raise the underlying argument in that unfair labor practice proceeding that we were legally precluded from complying with that. The only thing.
You sure you want to take that position?
Well, that's a decision that this court said in 1994. We think, as a matter of law, that there's a different rule that's applicable to constitutional questions, such as the Appropriations Clause and sovereign immunity. And we've observed that point in our footnote. So, but this court's never addressed that. And we think we have to be able to raise that.
So your position is that in that pending case, you are at liberty to raise?
Normally the rule would be that we could not. We would say that for the Appropriations Clause, under this court's decision in Air Force, and under this court's decision in the Department of Army involving sovereign immunity, certain things are not waivable, and certain preclusions rules cannot be applied, and the Appropriation Clause arguments fall within that category. Just as sovereign immunity arguments. That's, by the way, no decision on this court has ever accepted that point. There is really no point, just as this court realized in the 1994 decision, Department of Treasury, for this court to refuse to reach the merits in this case, where that is necessarily going to be represented to you later on in this unfair labor practice proceeding that the unions, these very same unions, have presented. So at some point, the merits of this determination are going to be presented to you. You might as well do it now, which is exactly what the court said in Department of Treasury, when it said that we will not construe the 7103 to preclude us from 7123 from precluding us from reaching that question.
Schaffel makes the point that that's an inducement to further sloppy practice of the sort that's been characteristic here.
Your Honor, it just says the executive branch may not waive sovereign immunity.
Therefore, But you don't need to raise it before the agency.
Well, whatever we had to do, inadvertence or even sloppy practices cannot authorize the executive branch to make appropriations that are contrary to the Appropriations Clause or the Anti-Deficiency Act or the Purpose Act. It doesn't matter how sloppy we were because we can't do it no matter what. So, and not to defend the point, but the point is real because there are certain things which are not waivable. Appropriations Clause is one of them. This is this court held in the Air Force. So I see my time has expired. I thank the court for its attention. If there are no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Koppel, thank you. The case is submitted.